All right, before we get into the message today, just have a couple quick announcements, items, I guess, for you all to make note of. The first one,
let's try to get this a little bit. I can get it to stay right there.
So the first one, I can't get it to stay right there. So unless I stand here and hold it the whole time, and that will get a little bit annoying. All right, well, I'll just go with that. The first item, start over here. Financial Peace University is going to begin on April 5th. It's going to start at 9 a.m. in the annex. We will actually have childcare starting at 9 o'clock if you'd like to be a part of this class. And then at 9:30, children will be dismissed to the various classes that they typically attend. Financial Peace University, for those of you who are wondering, is a class that is designed to help people with their finances, looking at finances from a biblical and faith-based perspective. It's actually a class that I've participated in the past and benefited from it in a huge way. It's one of those real-life, very practical training opportunities to help us to be the kind of people that we can be. Through classes like this, we become better givers, we become more generous, we become ultimately better stewards of all the blessings and resources that God has given us. So that's coming up April 5th. Now, you can see there on the screen, there is a fee for it. It is $93 to participate. Here's the thing. We do have money available for scholarships, so please don't let that $93 keep you from participating in this class. This is for single people, married people, those that are college students or young adults, even if you've been married for 30, 40 years, and you're in your 70s or 80, this will be a blessing to anyone that participates in it. I assure you of that. You can find out more information on our website or the bulletin article. My bulletin article for today has more information about it. So I would encourage you to think about participating in this class. Pray about it. It would be a blessing to you to participate. Also, if you have friends, co-workers, neighbors that you think would be blessed by this, let them know about it. There's some flyers that are available in the on the table there in the foyer. Pick one of those up. Give that to them. Let them know about it. And the same thing applies. If that $93 keeps them from doing it, let them know that we have money available to help them participate in the class. So that's item number one. The second item is this. So we're continuing to update the picture board, and as you can see with these pictures here, we could use some updating of our picture board there in the foyer. As you can see, could use some updating. These are actually, I found one of the old pictorial directories. Let me tell you, I enjoyed looking at those immensely. Over in classroom one, immediately following the service today, Debbie Pinnock's going to be back there with her camera and we'll snap a shot. This is for new members. Those of you whose pictures on the board look kind of like this. If you now have gray hair and you once had brown hair, if you once had hair and now have no hair, perhaps it's time to get those updated. So that's available to you as well, immediately following service today. All right. We're continuing our series called Who is Jesus? Essentially, one of the big ideas of this series is that by understanding who Jesus is, we better position ourselves to respond appropriately. I'm going to say that again. By understanding who Jesus is, by thinking about who our Messiah is, we better position ourselves to respond accordingly. It's a truth that we see all through the gospel accounts. When people encounter Jesus, they are going to respond one way or another. Some fall at his feet, worship him, and become a follower of his. Well, there are others that turn their back on Jesus and say, "No, you are not my Lord. I won't follow you." You see, when you come to know Jesus A response is demanded of you. And so all of us need to think, how do we respond to Jesus? We're looking at those different I am statements from the Gospels, from the Gospel of John. And particularly today, we're going to be talking about Jesus being the light of the world. But before we even get to the passages for this morning, one thing that I was thinking about when it relates to how we respond to Jesus. When people interact with you, when people interact with me, do they know that I'm a follower of Jesus based on that interaction? Do they come to know more about the Savior because they spent time with me? When they walk away from the conversation, the interaction, do they know more about Jesus? Hopefully, as we continue to talk about who Jesus is, it will sort of infiltrate our lives, transform our lives, so that as we reflect on this question, people will come to know Jesus more because of their interaction with us. A few years back, I was eating lunch with a friend. I was back home in the Toledo area, and we were sitting there to a gourmet lunch at Subway, and as we're sitting there eating our sandwiches, a friend came up, and I hardly recognized him, but he recognized me. So as two of us are sitting there at the table, this other guy was now standing next to us at the table we were sitting at, and we started to reminisce about our childhood. You see, the guy that was standing next to the table was Craig, who was my childhood best friend. It had been 20 years, probably, since I had interacted with Craig. But as I was talking with Craig, and as we were talking about, like, when he was Michelangelo and I was Donatello playing Ninja Turtles, or he was Pete Rose and I was Alan Trammell as we were playing baseball, or he was Nolan Ryan, whatever the case maybe. As we were talking about that, it became very clear to me that Craig was not right. And what I mean by that is the way he was talking, every once in a while his speech would be slurred, or he would be saying some things that were totally incoherent. They just weren't totally making sense. I could just tell something was going on. It was great to catch up with him and to talk about our childhood, but I knew things weren't quite right. And I can't even put my finger on exactly what it was, but I could tell something wasn't right. So Craig leaves, and Nick and I are sitting there. Nick knew Craig as well. We were all childhood friends. And so I said, you know, that was really cool, but what's up with Craig? He began to tell me about how his life had completely spiraled out of control. He had gotten into alcohol really bad, and then that led to meth and even harder drugs. He had spent some time in jail because he had stolen a car. His life was just totally, totally a mess. And because of that, he had become very emotionally and mentally unstable. You see, this life pattern that Craig was on was totally dark. And it was at that moment, that was one of the first moments in my life, that I really started to understand the power of darkness. You see, as I was looking at Craig in the face, it's like I wasn't even looking at Craig anymore. The power of darkness had been at work in his life. Now, there's still hope for Craig, and I still pray for Craig. But in that moment, in a very tangible, almost palpable way, I could see the power of darkness at work. And so I ask you, how do you see the power of darkness at work? Perhaps it was even watching the news today to see about the killing of several Christians from the Pakistani Taliban. But think about that for a moment. How do you see the power of darkness at work? Are there certain symbols that come to mind? Are there people that come to mind? Are there situations that come to mind for you? How do you see the power of darkness at work? And then I wanted you to reflect on this question for a moment. As the darkness surrounds you, as the darkness surrounds us, will you choose to be a source of light? A simple question, will you choose to be a source of light? And then, as the darkness surrounds us as a community of faith, thinking about it from a collective point of view, will we choose to be a source of light, to shine brightly in this dark world. It's imperative for us all to remember that we are followers of the one who said, "I am the light of the world." And he said that in John chapter 8 and verse 12. Let's go ahead and turn our Bibles over there. John chapter 8, starting at verse 12. It says this: "When Jesus spoke again to the people, he said, 'I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life.'" So that's verse 12 of chapter 8. I'm going to read it again. "When Jesus spoke again to the people, he said, 'I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life.'" Now, I think it would be a good thing for us to look at the verses that are directly before verse 12. So let's look at verses 1 through 11 really quickly from John chapter 8. Actually, we're going to start in verse 2. It says there, "At dawn, he appeared again in the temple courts where all the people gathered around him, and he sat down to teach them. The teacher of the law and the Pharisees brought in a woman caught in adultery. They made her stand before the group and said to Jesus, 'Teacher, this woman was caught in the act of adultery, and the law of Moses commanded us to stone such a woman. Now, what do you say?' They were using this as a question, as a trap, in order to have a basis for accusing him. But Jesus bent down and started to write on the ground with his finger. When they kept on questioning him, he straightened up and said to them, 'Let any one of you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her.' Again, he stooped down and wrote on the ground. At this, those who heard began to go away one at a time, the older ones first, until only Jesus was left, with the woman still standing there. Jesus straightened up and asked her, 'Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?' 'No one, sir,' she said. 'Then neither do I condemn you,' Jesus declared. 'Go now and leave your life of sin.'" In chapter 1 of John, John said of Jesus that he was one who was full of grace and truth. We see this truth right here in this story with the woman caught in adultery, that Jesus was full of grace and truth. It was grace that moved him to speak up for this woman, and then to continue standing by this woman even when everybody else had walked away. That's grace. That's mercy. That's love. That's Jesus. But then we see the truth side of Jesus. He's the one that remains next to this woman who had sin. But yet he stands there and he says, "I don't condemn you, but go now and leave your life of sin." There was a change that needed to be made in this woman's life. She had been acting in a way that was against the purposes and will of God. And so Jesus speaks the truth to her. "Go now and leave your life of sin. Be transformed. Repent and change." Everybody else had walked away. Jesus had stood up for this lady, and now they were gone. It was just this woman caught in adultery and Jesus, the Messiah. And imagine that we had an opportunity moments after this to talk to this woman. What was this like for you? What do you think of this man who stood up for you and stood beside you even in the face of darkness? And we're moved to ask the question, is Jesus one who shines? Is Jesus one who shines? And you'd have to imagine for this lady in that moment, it would just be a loud cry, "Yes, he shines. I see it. I feel it. I hear it." And then verse 12 again. "When Jesus spoke again to the people, he said, 'I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life.' Jesus said that whoever follows after him, whoever follows his teaching, whoever goes the direction that he goes, will never walk in darkness. And I think that means that person will never walk in fear anymore. You think about darkness, not knowing what's around the corner, not even knowing what's in front. But as one follows the light of the world, he or she knows the direction that he's going. There's nothing to fear. You're following the light of the world. Jesus also said that person will have the light of life. And by that, I believe he means the hope and salvation, the abundant life that comes through him. Jesus was saying something that had been said about his Father for a long time. In fact, let's look at three different passages from the book of Psalms. The first one, chapter 27, the first part of verse 1. The psalmist declares about God, "The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear?" And then the 76th psalm in verse 4, "You are radiant with light, more majestic than mountains, rich with game." And then finally, Psalm 89 in verse 15, "Blessed are those who have learned to acclaim you, who walk in the light of your presence, Lord." And so it had been said about God for years and years that he was the light. Those that walked in his presence walked in the light. And Jesus, in that same line, with that same theme continuing, says, "I am the light of the world." I believe Jesus is saying something very important about his identity. He is God incarnate. "See me," Jesus says, "see the Father." He's God incarnate who is fulfilling the promises of God. This is the one. This is the one we've been waiting for. We've been waiting for the light. He is now here. Jesus proclaims, "I am the light." And the truth is that those that follow the light of the world are the light of the world as well. That's what Jesus says in chapter 5 and verses 14 through 16 of the book of Matthew. Matthew chapter 5, verses 14 through 16. Jesus looks out over the crowd and he says, "You are the light of the world. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven." So Jesus tells his followers that they are the light of the world. If you look back at Matthew chapter 4, what we see about that group that was surrounding Jesus at this time is that they were likely, at least many of them, the outcast of society. These were not the elite people of that time. Many of these people would have recently been healed by Jesus. Many of them would not have had just a great identity, great standing among their peers. But it's these people, these followers of Jesus, that Jesus says, "You are the light of the world." And the truth is, they are the light of the world, not because of who they are, but because of who is shining in and through them. They are the light because Jesus, their Lord, is the light. And Jesus says, "You shine in order that others may see the light in you and glorify the Father." That's your purpose in shining, so that others may glorify the Father. Now, as we look at our society, as we look at culture, as we interact with people, we understand there's a lot of people at this time that are not glorifying the Father. They have not fallen at the feet of Jesus. And still, it's time to shine. It's time to continue to show the radiance of who God is so that people will come to know him. So how do you shine? Really, I think really in Matthew chapter 5, 6, and 7, we see how we're to shine. The Sermon on the Mount tells us about how to shine. We're to remain sexually pure. That's what it means to be a child of the light. To be a child of the darkness, means to be impure. We see these characteristics at play all throughout the Sermon on the Mount. Light is opposed to darkness. Light loves your enemies and prays for those who persecute you. Darkness moves one to hate. Light is about letting your yes be yes and your no, no. Darkness is about being dishonest and profaning the name of God. Light is about living a life that strives to honor and praise God alone and not to lift up yourself. Darkness is about being self-centered and making life all about you, all about me. Light is about not worrying and not being anxious about anything. Darkness is living a life of anxiety and fear. Light is about not judging others. Darkness is about being judgmental and hateful toward others. You see it in the Sermon on the Mount. Imagine for a moment that your boss comes to you, whatever your place of work is, and says, I would like you to do some creative accounting for us. Could you kind of help us fudge some numbers a little bit to help things look like everything's going okay for our company? And the boss says, for doing this, I will give you a 20% raise. Will you go ahead and do that? What would you do in that moment? Imagine that you're standing around with a group of friends and they're talking maliciously about someone that you know well, and you have some stuff that you could add to that conversation that would make you look really good in their midst, and it would all be sort of kind of true. So you could be involved in their gossip. What would you do as your friends gossiped about someone else? You have the opportunity. It's tax season, right? You have the opportunity by checking one box or writing one number that's not true. You have the opportunity to save yourselves $1,000. The government doesn't need my money anyways, or shouldn't have my money. One little number could change things by $1,000. What would you do? You see your neighbor across the street, and they're struggling to get the lawnmower, the weed eater started, and you're like, I know something about motors and lawn care or something like that. And so you could go over and help. You're like, man, just so busy. I'm hungry or I'm tired. Your neighbor needs help. What will you do? A friend of yours comes and says, hey, there's a mission trip coming up. Would you like to participate in this? This is a great opportunity to be an ambassador for Jesus Christ in a place in the world that doesn't know Jesus yet. What would you do? See, all of these situations give us an opportunity to shine brightly for Jesus. Remember what Jesus said to the disciples as they were standing around hearing him teach. You are the light of the world. You are the light to the world. So a very simple question that we all have to reflect on every single day. Will we let Jesus shine through us? I'm going to embarrass someone real quick, and I apologize for that. So when I was thinking about this and just people in our church family that do this, Bill Zimmerman came to mind as someone who just shines. I think about his work that he did with a World Bible School, and he and Cindy do Bible studies with people. And each Wednesday night, Bill is over there pushing a cart in the food pantry and talking to people about Jesus. When I think of people that are shining for Jesus, Bill Zimmerman comes to my mind, and Cindy as well, and he's shaking his head, but it's true. And may we all shine for Jesus. So in the book of Mark, in chapter 15, this is while the crucifixion is taking place, we read this. This is verses 33 and 34, Mark 15. At noon, darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m. And at 3 p.m, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani, which means, my God, why have you forsaken me? I believe it's Mark's the only one that mentions that darkness fell over the whole earth during the crucifixion. And it was a dark moment. In some ways, at least his disciples at that point felt defeated. We lost. He wasn't the Messiah. The Romans and the Jews, they have won. They are the ones that have the last word. Perhaps some of the disciples were even thinking, why did I give up this portion of my life? I could have been doing other things, and yet I invested everything in this one that said he's the light of the world. Really, the light of the world? He's on a cross. But remember, that's Friday, and Sunday was still to come. And so in Mark chapter 16, verses 2 and 3, we read this. Very early on the first day of the week, just after sunrise, they were on their way to the tomb, and they asked each other, who will roll the stone away from the entrance of the tomb? You see, Sunday's the day of resurrection, and I don't think it's by accident that Mark wrote it was just after sunrise that they saw that the stone had been rolled away. So on the third day, the sun shined as the sun shined. And the truth of the matter is, for all of us, is we shine. We've been called to shine as the sun shines in us. That's our call as the community of faith, to shine. Do we feel the power of darkness at work? Do we look around and see darkness all over the place? We do. We see it. We hear it. We feel it. We know it. But we remember, we follow the one who said, I am the light of the world. And then he turned to each one of us. He said, you are the light of the world. I'd like to conclude with what's called the priestly blessing from Numbers chapter 6, verses 24 through 26. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. The Lord turn his face toward you and give you peace. If there's anybody here this morning that has not yet given their life over to the light of the world, Jesus Christ, in baptism, perhaps today will be the day that you do that. We say this all the time, but really there's no better time than now to give your life over to Jesus in baptism. If there's anybody here today that needs the prayers of this group of people, we would be so glad and honored to pray with you or for you. So whatever need that you have, you can come forward now as we stand and continue to worship.